DW Africa Link. Internet usage is rapidly increasing across Africa. Nigeria, South Africa, Ghana, and Kenya are countries with some of the highest internet users. And that's the good news. The bad news is that the growing usage is also giving more room for cyber crimes, which means it is important to take cybersecurity seriously. And that's what Zambia's government is trying to do. But not everyone is happy. We'll find out why. So what is the situation on the ground, and how can we tackle cyber crimes? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Cybercrime in Zambia has been on the rise. In April 2024, a major cybercrime syndicate involving 77 people, including 22 Chinese nationals, was uncovered. This syndicate was involved in sophisticated internet fraud and online scams targeting both Zambians and individuals in other countries. In 2022, Zambia recorded over 10 million cyber attacks across various social media platforms. For more on this, let's bring in Kathy Short. She is my colleague and DW correspondent in Zambia. We also have Emmanuel Chipeta, University of Zambia graduate who specialized in telecommunications. His work involves offering support for IT systems or applications. Hello, guys. Welcome to the program. I'm going to start with you, Emmanuel. What do we mean by cybercrime and cybersecurity? Break it down for us.
Thank you so much. So I'll start with cybersecurity. We live in a very digitized world where information is very key. If you look at the current situation where we are right now, with a lot of people doing a lot of business online, we have a lot of people that are also visiting social media platforms, following celebrities, and basically catching up with family and friends. There's a lot of information out there, and we have systems in place for us to be able to communicate with each other, to do transactions. It could be things like financial systems, online banking. So we have a lot of these applications in place. And cybersecurity basically deals with protection against digital attacks that is aimed at certain individuals.
So basically what you told us now is explaining what cybersecurity is, right? So there would be no cybersecurity without cybercrime. Tell us more about what cybercrime is.
Yes, so as I mentioned earlier, we deal with a lot of systems where information is very key. We have aspects to do with confidentiality of information, the integrity of the information, and one being able to access their information when they need it and wherever they need it. So anything that infringes on these three aspects can be described as cybercrime. So you target somebody's confidentiality, you tamper with some data to manipulate it for your own financial gain. That is one aspect of looking at cybercrime, and also availability of information. So if you prevent somebody from accessing information, which in essence should be accessible by the owner, that is also under cybercrime.
Right. That's interesting. So when we talk about cybercrime, it's not necessarily some sort of huge thing that we sometimes see in the movies, like someone hacking into, you know, a vault or some bank account, or, you know, even the government, for instance. It could be very simple things. Give us some of the very simple examples of cybercrime.
One example of cybercrime that I would give is impersonation. Normally this happens when you share your credentials with somebody and they manage to log into your online accounts and they impersonate you. But that is not always the case. It could be a phishing mail or any message via any other platform with a link asking you to enter a one-time password, which is basically giving somebody, a hacker in that case, permission to use your account. So that is one common form of cybercrime impersonation.
Right. That is when I actually give my information to someone. But there are cases where I don't give my information to someone, but they have a means to access it. Isn't that the case sometimes?
Yes, and it is usually the case. So
How do they get my information if I don't share it with them? How do they get the information?
Yeah, so it is interesting because actually yesterday I received a text message from a certain contact, a Zambian number, talking about the constituency development fund, asking me to share my NRC number. So it could be a random message targeted at a wider audience, but with that appeal, which will make people either click a link that is shared or to share certain important information about their accounts.
Right. I do get some of those emails or text messages, of course. Extra reason to be careful. Kathy, you've been listening. We've got a crash course on what cybercrime and cybersecurity is, and I think it lays the foundation really well for this discussion. How do Zambians, Kathy, generally treat the issue of cybercrime and cybersecurity? Is there an admission that this is serious and we got to treat it seriously, or are people a bit more lax about it?
I think right now we are seeing that there have been a lot of issues. You know, people have been swindled online and other things have happened, you know, cyberbullying and also involving children and banking crimes, as Emmanuel rightly put it. I think there was a laxity and also a lot of people were taking advantage. And that's a good side of the cybersecurity law that, you know, they're trying now to ensure that culprits are brought to book.
Right. It comes in handy. But let's hammer a bit on the law, because it's the same law that has existed for a few years now. But there's been some sort of tweak to it of some sort, and it's causing some controversy. Tell us about that.
Yes, this law, the Cybersecurity and Cybercrimes law, was enacted in 2021, shortly before the 2021 election. So the previous government, the PF, Patriotic Front government under Edgar Lungu, hurriedly implemented this law. And the current government, who were the UPND, United Party for National Development, who were in opposition then in 2021, actually suffered at the hands of this law, because the other part of the coin in terms of this law is that it's vague and government can determine how they're going to use it. And so even at the inception and the, you know, the announcement about the bill at the time coming into effect, human rights defenders said that the provisions of this law threaten the right to protection of the law guaranteed by the freedom of conscience that is guaranteed by Article 19, the freedom of expression enshrined in Article 20 of the Zambian Constitution, and the freedom of the press as enshrined in Article 20 of the Zambian Constitution. So even then, other stakeholders were not given an opportunity to discuss and consult with the government. They just hurriedly enacted the law, I think in a way maybe to fix their opponents. But now the ones that have come into power, the United Party for National Development, was a bit relaxed, I think, when they came into office. But lately, we've seen some, you know, non-tolerance to divergent views. And so now they are coming in heavy on private citizens, online, digital rights. And also we've seen also even media organizations being afraid. And now, just a few weeks ago, the Minister of Home Affairs and Internal Affairs, Jack Mwimbo, mentioned also that WhatsApp group administrators should be careful and that they will take the responsibility. So it gives, this law somehow gives the government a lot of powers over citizens.
So here's what I would like you to really clarify for us, because from all that we've said so far, you would assume that a cybersecurity law, which is the case in Zambia, should actually be a good thing. But as you say, there are parts of the law that people feel is being weaponized by the government. Which part of it exactly? So we're clear what people have an issue with.
Okay, people have an issue with the law which prohibits the interception of communication. It legalizes the lawful interception of communication by a law enforcement officer, you know, where they believe that a crime has been committed and they don't even need to have a search warrant. They can just, you know, if you are a journalist, for instance, they have the right to just come and grab your laptop or your phone and just go. The act also permits a law enforcement officer intercepting communication without an order of the High Court if the delay will hamper on the investigations or as the government sees fit.
Right. It sounds like, yes, the government is wielding a lot of power. Emmanuel, I would want you to come in on this, because is this really something that is unexpected that the government is doing? Because if you listen to some of the arguments being made, if national security come from, because that's also their job, is that just not what it is? Or based on your experience, is this also rightfully so causing concern?
The law is there to protect the ordinary citizens, and rightfully so. But just as with anything else, there is always potential for anything to get misused. There is always a loophole somewhere where we have vague statements as regards to what is considered as a potential crime and what is not. So if you look at the current situation, obviously you could argue that there is a lot of infringement of user freedom, as with the case of WhatsApp administrators being held liable for the activities that go on in their forums. So from a professional point of view, I would say it is meant for the good, but it can be misused.
Okay, which is a fair statement to make. It is made for the good, but it can be misused. To be honest, doesn't that apply to many other laws, right? You kind of have to have a sense of trust to believe that, okay, this is actually going to be carried out the way the state says it will be. Because this really ropes in into the role of the state in fighting cyber crime or tightening cyber security. Is there something more the state should do to allay fears, you think, Emmanuel?
I believe there is a lot that we can do. There is a lot. We'll need to start with early education. We need to look at the young ones when they are growing up. Are they exposed to the right information, and how do they protect themselves from infringement? Because if today somebody reported me that I committed an offense and the evidence that is provided is maybe a screenshot which has been photoshopped, are we able to fight against that? So looking at it from a positive side, it is something that can protect the citizens from, for example, cyberbullying, from somebody interfering with our confidentiality and getting into our personal space when we don't need them to do so. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is possible that somebody can commit criminal activities and we end up targeting people that we don't intend because of maybe impersonation, like I mentioned in the introduction.
So it's a bit of a bittersweet state. Kathy,
there's a lot we can do.
Let me come to you, Kathy, because you're clearly suggesting that people are concerned that this law could be abused and journalists like yourself or ordinary citizens could be caught in the loop. Has there been any current reason that really makes people more concerned? And what exactly do they expect the government to change to make them feel more comfortable with this law?
I think being a democracy, Zambia being a democracy, the citizens are expecting that they can be able to discuss issues of national interest online because the media space, so to speak, in terms of the public media and others, the spaces have been closed. And one of the only avenues that citizens have is digital media, online media. So they are able to freely express themselves. But also, like Emmanuel said, I understand in some cases, some citizens have taken advantage and they insult and use very, very bad language. And the government, to come back at them has been, saying that they'll fix them and also strengthen hate speech laws. And I think this is a response now that we are seeing. And also the president, when he was making this announcement, he said he was going to call the army. And so that was a threat. So the citizens are looking, I think those that are really wanting the best for this country, want some form of a dialogue and also laws that will protect offenders, but protect fundamental freedoms in this
Right.
country.
It is natural for people to be concerned, but this law in no way prohibits people from expressing themselves, on social media, right? That's not what it's doing, is it?
No, but it's creating a lot of self-censorship. People are not as free as they used to be because all of a sudden there are all these groups that, will censor you online. If you say something, you complain about the 20-hour or 21 hours of daily power cuts that we are experiencing, or things like that, they will tell you off. And so there are all these things going on, and people are beginning to, to just be afraid.
So the president suggested he was going to bring in the military in cases where people are, I guess, expressing thoughts and beliefs that were extreme. I'm assuming this is the way it was communicated, and people see it as a threat, you say. But I'm pretty sure people also understand the challenge here. I think people's thoughts and concerns are valid, and it makes sense that you say government should hear them out. But for others that you've been speaking to, do they understand the challenges of free speech?
Yes, I support the parts of the law, which criminalize other aspects of digital crimes, as Emmanuel elaborated earlier. That's good. People should be made accountable for the crimes that they commit against others. And also, people should be free, to not be threatened with their lives or things like that. So citizens also have a responsibility. And also, even in terms of child crimes online, as a mother, I think also that is very important, especially as a mother to girl children. I find that very, very good because our children, have been susceptible to criminal acts online, which have gone, scot-free, and the perpetrators have gone scot-free. So that is good. So the law in itself, not everything is bad, but it's just the freedom, the fundamental freedoms, because human rights defenders are saying that this law, actually, this part of the law is not consistent with international human rights standards and principles.
Right. And I guess that is the challenge, that if there's any tweaking that needs to be done to make sure that it conforms with international standards, then I guess that is the discussion that government has to have to make sure that everything, connects well with international laws. Thank you very much for that, Kathy Shorter. Emmanuel Chipeta, I'm going to give you the final words to wrap this up.
As Kathy has mentioned, there are some good parts of the law that are meant at protecting the general citizens, the users of online platforms, and generally everybody that is in the digital world. But there are so many areas where we can also improve on sensitization by making this information available to the general public. We need to do more sensitization through social media, because right now we can clearly see from the evidence that mainstream media is slowly diminishing in terms of outreach. Most people rely on online platforms for communication, and we need to use that for the good.
Thank you very much. Kathy Short, DW correspondent in Zambia, Emmanuel Chipeta, University of Zambia graduate, specializing in telecommunications, offering support for IT systems or applications. Thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you for having us, Eddie.
Thank you, Eddie.
Make your voice count. Join DW Africa on Facebook and comment on the stories there.
In Ghana, cybercrime has been a growing concern too. In recent years, Ghana has recorded over 11,000 cyber attacks. This includes various forms of online fraud, hacking, and other cyber-related offenses. Isaac Komiete is a technology educator. He works with young people in training them to become IT specialists. He joins me from Ghana. Hello, Isaac. First, tell us, what is the situation in Ghana regarding cyber crimes and cyber security?
So cyber crime or cyber security in the first place is one of the booming field in cyber security, whereby young people want to also get into that field since it's something new that is emerging in Ghana here. And also in relation to cyber security, also it is also something which is on the rise as we currently live in Ghana here.
Okay. So gaining popularity in terms of the interest people have in it. But is that also because there's a lot of cyber crime going around? And is there enough cyber security to tackle those cyber crimes?
So cyber crime currently is becoming a problem as we have it here, with the reason being that we have young people who find themselves engaging in cyber crime without them knowing it. So first, they have the skills for them to be, they have the skills whereby we go to harness the skills into positive use. But because they lack certain knowledge of harnessing the skills in positivity, they find themselves using it in the negative field, whereby you find people cyberbullying and also performing cybercrime by trying to break into people's system unknowingly. So let's imagine that if people don't know and we begin to educate them in this way that, hey, you have the skills, so why don't you rather come so that we can help you harness the skill, so that even though we are just educating you, we are still giving the training to ensure that you can start to turn this negativity of skill you're having into something positive.
For those listening that may be like, I thought maybe anything cyber negative is part of cyber crime. Can you sort of draw the difference between what is cyber crime and what is cyber bullying?
So anytime we are looking at cyber crime, we are looking at you being able to use the experience you have in computing to be able to perform a crime. So for instance, some people are able to use the experience they have in computing to be able to break into people's system illegally. Then also some people also use the experience that they have also to be able to impersonate people. Let's say for instance, they might be male and they try to impersonate as female to be able to steal people's properties. So all these ones are cyber crime. But for cyberbullying, as we are over here, people feel like, yes, I'm at wherever I am. You don't know where I stay. So I can just come, insult you to speak my mind. And there's no way that I can come and, be able to find my whereabouts. So that one has something to do with cyberbullying.
Right. Okay. So who are those committing these crimes?
So with this day and age that we have here, we find more of the youth committing cyber crimes. We find more of the youth committing cyber crimes.
So we're jumping straight into solutions, but starting on the government level, is Ghana's government doing enough to, invest in cyber security against cyber crimes?
So for now, I hardly see a lot from the government side. So we have Ghana Cyber Security Authority, who are supposed to be doing the education, but I don't hear or I don't feel much of their presence. So what I can say for the presence for the government is for the Ghana police, I sense their presence more than the Cyber Security Authority of Ghana, in the sense that anytime something begins to serve as a threat to the country, that is when Ghana police over here responds to it.
Okay. So if in some cases the government is not doing enough in terms of providing cyber security against cyber crimes or cyber attacks, on a personal level, how can I protect myself against cyber attacks online?
Good. So that is a very good question, because if you have institutions who are supposed to empower us, but we don't feel that much of it, then that comes into how we, the individual, can protect ourselves. So one way you can do that is by creating a strong password. Now, this password you create should include something that can easily identify you, because somebody in creating a password can use their name, they can use the place that they live, which is not strong enough. So in creating a strong password, what we look at is always having a lot of things within a password. So minimum, you should have 8 minimum total number of characters. With total number of characters, I'm looking at having numbers, alphabet, and symbol all together, because that one makes it very difficult for an attacker to know that within your password, you have some capitalization used, you also have some symbols used. Then also, so instead of password, some people use what we call the passphrase. So passphrase is like the sentence form. So let's say Kofi is a boy. So Kofi is a boy, as you can see, is a sentence form over here. And with this, as we are over here, you can mix it together with, I mean, the requirements whereby you can have some capitalization symbols, among other things included, because that one is longer and it's going to be quite difficult for an attacker to go to memorize all these passphrases. Another way, if you take away the strong password or the passphrase, the next way you can also protect yourself is by using the multi-factor authentication. Another insight you can also try to protect yourself personally is by updating softwares. Yes, because every now and then over manufacturers notice that they have loopholes or they have vulnerabilities within that system whereby an attacker can use to get into that system. And if that happens, they're able to have access to people connected to their network. So every now and then, manufacturers softwares and, physical devices release updates to fix those loopholes.
Right. Isaac Komiete, technology educator, thank you very much for your insights.
Right. Thank you as well.
That's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Buba Jallo, and I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.